It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.
This podcast is brought to you by our original I Am a Sewing Machine t-shirt. If you want to support Sewing Out Loud and tell the world that you are a sewing machine, go to sewhere.com/I Am a Sewing Machine and use code MACHINE to get 10% off your t-shirt.
Welcome to Sewing Out Loud, the official podcast of ZD Sewing Studio. Here are your hosts, ZD and Mallory.
Hello, and welcome to the podcast, and I'm Mallory Donahue.
And I'm ZD Donahue.
I almost forgot how to start the podcast.
Did you forget your name?
Well, I have, like, something up here that I need to read, and so I just stuck an and in there. Today, we're going to talk about budgeting for sewing. And the reason we're going to talk about it is because there was a post in the Facebook group, right, Mom?
Yes.
And I was like, hey, budgeting for sewing. And Mom's like, yuck.
Well, not that I don't have to do it or I haven't done it. It's just that I hate it.
I want to go spend
all the money I want and have all the fun I want. And I don't want to have to pick this instead of that. And I don't want to have to make choices. I just want it.
Amen.
And I don't want to have to feel guilty if I do buy it and then it sits there for 100 years.
There you go.
I don't want all those things. I just want to sew.
There you go.
I'm sure there's no one else out there that feels like this.
I'm loving it, right?
No one feels like this, right? Yeah. Everybody knows exactly what they're going to spend, what they're going to spend it on, and all choices are easy and simple.
Whoa. You okay over there?
Like when I had to buy this big old microphone instead of fabric.
Yeah.
So I could podcast.
Well, first of all.
So does podcasting pay for sewing?
Kind of.
Okay.
For us, okay.
After how many years?
Well, right.
Right.
I enjoy using a budgeting software called You Need a Budget. It's short. When you shorten that, you call it YNAB. Okay. YNAB. So people call it YNAB. And it's this budgeting software that has a cult following, I would call it. All right. There's like a big Facebook group around it. And it's like either people love it or they hate it. Okay. And I see a lot of you sewing people are in the group.
Yeah.
And you know, it costs like $80 a year or something. So people are like, well, you shouldn't spend money on a budgeting tool because it should be free because you're trying to save money. Except like if the budgeting tool is like good for you and helps you save money, you know, then...
Everybody can't give away their ideas and their services for nothing.
Right, right. Yes. So anyway, I do enjoy this, and it lets you, like, you know, you set goals, you fund every month, and you fund months forward. And anyway, I just wanted to bring that up because we're talking about budgeting. But we have a unique situation because sewing is our job. And talking about sewing
is our job.
But the person who asked the question in the group was sort of like, so what's going on is they're having their first baby and they think they may be leaving the workforce because the job does not pay more than daycare would cost. This is a very common
dilemma.
Or common realization.
Right.
Yeah, you know. And so then do you keep your job so that you're not out of the workforce and you don't lose those years of
right. Some people just work during childcare years to save their place in their job,
That's right.
To speak.
And
yes.
So we're going to maybe leave out some of the terrible social implications of this. And this
is one of those
choice.
This is one of those cheerful podcasts.
Yeah, this is just so uplifting, right? Yeah. So a lot of people, you know, find that. But, you know, then this person says, okay, but I love sewing, so, you know, I want to keep doing it. You know,
right.
How much should I budget or how do you pay for it? Or do you use your sewing? I think this is maybe like the crux of the issue here. Do you use your sewing to pay for your sewing?
Right.
You know.
I have a lot to say about
there's
that.
There's so many
a
things
whole
to
lot.
Say.
Yeah, there's
so,
a
yeah,
lot to
Mom,
say.
So, yeah, Mom start saying things, because that's what we do here. We say things into this mic.
Okay, the first thing that comes to my mind is, this is, I hate to lead with this, but it's just the first thing that comes to my mind. Be careful you don't ruin your love of something.
Right.
By, you know, pandering it out to someone else, I guess. I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah.
Like, you love sewing because you're creating things for yourself, because you're learning things for yourself. Okay. You can wind up not liking sewing because you have to do it this way and you have to do it for some. I mean, I even found that even when owning the shop, as much as I loved having the shop, it was like, oh, these new embroidery designs are coming in. I have to.
Oh, yeah.
I have to stitch them out. I have to come up with a project, you know, because I have to sell these because otherwise the rent monster will come and you know, ask me for money I don't have.
I mean, I even find that, like, in this iteration of our business, sometimes, like, okay, am I sewing the thing that people will be interested in?
Well, that's true.
Have I chosen the project?
Yes, sometimes we're sewing for you instead of sewing for ourselves.
Yeah,
is what we're saying.
You
right.
know,
right.
there are, like, worse jobs. Okay.
I'm right, not right, right. But the thing, but, and no, don't claim, you're not complaining about the job, but what you're saying is, so you work all day on this sewing, and then when it comes to your leisure or your hobby or whatever you call it, your art, your expression, are you tired of it because you spent that energy on others or someone else or another goal or whatever, you know, you spent it in a direction that was not for you only.
That's right. So when you go to sew, well, I think this is actually a really interesting time. So I don't know when you'll be listening to this podcast episode, but we are in the midst of the COVID pandemic, and there is a high demand for masks.
Well, and I can tell you, I follow plenty of people that were mask, mask, mask. I've made 100 masks. I've made 200 masks. You know, they're like keeping this tally. And now they're like, I never want to sew another mask in my life. I hate them. I hate I don't like even seeing them on anyone. I dream about masks. My fingers hurt. You know, like, you know, you have to take care of yourself.
Right.
And we did have some people that said, I will eventually sew some masks for myself, for my friends, for my family, that went ahead with what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them, I think, might be in a better place than the people that were mask, 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 mask.
I guess what I, why I want to bring that up is, so sometimes people say, well, I'm going to sew things and sell them to make money.
Right.
And in this moment, we have a very tangible example of a thing that you can sew and sell right now. I don't want to say it's insured that you would sell them because they are starting to be more mass manufactured at the moment. Like Old Navy is selling masks now.
Crayola is selling
there
masks.
There you go. So what I'm saying
Believe me, if you can sew it, someone else eventually will sell it.
Right. But what I'm saying is this is a very, I think it is kind of a unique moment where a lot of people found, okay, I actually can sew something.
Well,
it's not like they made a quilt and they're trying to sell it.
Well, and there were people whose income went away.
Yeah.
Or diminished.
And they,
were like, well, I for instance, there were aerial costumers, right, who were like, well, I've got, I can sew a mask. Nobody wants a costume right now. No one gets to perform.
Yeah.
You know, Cirque du Soleil is going for bankruptcy. So, you know, it fit in.
Right.
You know, it did fit in a lot of places and it worked well. And yes, there was a market, but still, still, what are you going to sell that mask for?
Mm-hmm.
How are you shipping it out? What is that cost? What is that time? What is the cost on your sewing machine?
Okay.
There's all, you know, it looks great. Oh, I have these scraps and I have a little bit of elastic and I can make this mask and I can sell it for $5 to $7 or whatever.
Right.
And yeah, you think you just made $5.
Right.
And that might not truly be a reality.
Oh, yeah. If we were selling the masks that we've been making, I'd say $20, $25.
$35.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I would.
Considering I've made all of them.
Yeah.
Just so Mallory knows.
I did. I kind of made some
of them.
Yeah,
she did do something.
So Yeah, I would. That's what I think it would cost, you know, based on our materials and our hours and our.
Well, and you know, we made a mask that was fitted. We made a mask that had
a pretty labor intensive mask,
you know, a nose wire in it that, I mean, not all masks are the same, right? Like anything else.
Right.
So, I mean, I have seen masks anywhere from like $5. Mm-hmm. Right, up to $20-$30.
Right.
So, you know, people making masks for people to wear in their wedding, or you know,
custom
making custom type masks, things like that.
So, okay, let's get a little away from the mask. But mm-hmm. I guess what I'm saying is, you kind of need to decide, or you know, experiment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so is there a thing you think you can sew and sell? Because mm-hmm. you talked about how you at one point would applique the name of a kid on like a little pair of overalls or like a mm-hmm. romper. And it was so popular at mm-hmm. this little custom shop. And it was something that you did for some extra fun.
Oh, I even had these ones that I appliqued that said, I am two.
There we
I
go.
Am three.
Yeah.
And those were not, that way it wasn't an
was
order.
Was it custom? Yes.
Right. Now, some people did order one, you know, but I could put those out and people are buying them for everybody's birthday.
Yeah.
You know?
So if you find something that is, okay, it's fairly like, you know, the mask thing's sort of emotional too. So it's not like you had a bunch of emotions tied up in that.
Right.
It was something that was easy for you to do. You felt the return on it was good, but it wasn't something that you kept doing forever and ever.
Well, I will have to tell you though, at that point in time, you could not get on the internet
uh-huh.
and order something up like that.
No, but you took an opportunity.
I took a unique
yeah.
niche.
Mm-hmm.
This was this shop. It was so cute, the shop, and they called it Chocolate Soup.
Aw.
And it was all kids' clothes, and almost all of them were handmade by people.
Yeah.
Some of them were ordered, you know, they had like a, but a lot of them, people came in with their ideas and tried to sell it to the
right.
shop. And they were very high quality.
Right.
Let me tell you, very high quality. There was, you had to have a pristine product to sell it at this. Well, it was also kind of in a high-end neighborhood. So
they had the market.
Not only the market, you could get your price.
Yeah, you could get your price.
Right.
Yes,
you know, somebody was paying $40 for a pair of little kids' overalls. Who'd have thought?
In 1985.
Yeah. Who would have thought? I wouldn't have paid that, you know.
Well, that's right. The other thing you got to remember.
Well, and fast fashion wasn't there yet.
Yeah.
Okay, so clothes were actually more expensive than in some senses.
Okay, I want to throw this quote out that I think is actually it's from a business that's no longer in business. It was like an academy for people who sold things on Etsy. And
mm-hmm.
I just followed them on Facebook, you know. And they said, you are not your target market.
That's right.
I love that. Because what we tend to do is undervalue what mm-hmm. we provide.
Mm-hmm.
So don't do that if you are going to fund your sewing
right.
with your sewing. Okay. Or if you're going to fund it, let's talk about not funding it with your, you know, with your sewing. Let's say you clean houses or you do freelance editing or you do something else. I think it is.
You shop for people.
There you go.
There's all
you
kinds of things.
You take in another baby or whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Whatever you
dog
do.
Dog sit.
Or you just take a percentage of your income. I do think that a really smart way to look at a sewing hobby is to put aside some level of money each month, because don't you think this is kind of a hobby where all of a sudden all your machines need to be serviced? Okay.
Right.
All of a sudden you do want to make a fabric purchase on some very precious fabric that might be on sale.
Well, the other, you're right, exactly, because if you keep buying things yard by yard,
mm-hmm.
you may go in the hole, but if you can buy a bolt of something at a better price, that's the way you actually really are going to eventually make money. You cannot keep buying retail,
yeah,
probably, and making any sort of profit.
If you want to buy, well, I'm not, and I'm just talking right. about even if you aren't
oh,
sewing.
Oh, you're just talking about sewing for yourself.
I'm just talking about a hobby.
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
I think sewing.
You're just talking about budgeting.
Yeah, I'm just talking
like
about budgeting.
Allowance.
Yes.
What allowance are you putting onto your sewing?
If you do that, let's like say that you set aside $150 a month for sewing,
mm-hmm.
okay? So you keep socking this away. You keep recording it in YNAB because they let you do that, and you don't have to have like a separate bank account. You just have your little envelopes there. Then all of a sudden, when three of your machines need to be serviced at the same time, there's some money set aside. Or ZD and Mallory have a pre-order for all three colors of Power Shaper Net that they sell. And man, that's like almost $70, but it's okay. I've got this set aside and now I'm going to stock up on Power Shaper Net, you know, or something like that. I think that is a good thing to do because like it's a little different. I think of some other hobbies like playing an instrument. Depending on the instrument, you know, how much maintenance does that instrument need? Or
well,
painting.
This is also a hobby where you have to renew your resources.
That's right. It's a very consuming hobby.
If I ride a bike, eventually I have to buy new tires and all this and all that. But I don't have to do it every time I ride my bike.
Yeah, you're really using up stuff when you sew.
Right.
Yes, yes. You know, I think about, like, if you do play a musical instrument and you pay for lessons each month. Okay, well, you know, maybe you buy a few books or something every once in a while to start off with.
But that initial investment, you know.
You got a pretty stable run, though, going there.
It depends on the instrument and what kind of maintenance and repair takes, you know.
So I would say that whether you're going to, so if you've got this chunk of money that you set aside every month into your little sewing fund, well, you can decide, okay, I'm going to try and sell this many masks, or I'm going to try and profit this much by making this whatever, or do alterations. Alterations, you told me.
Yep.
You told me.
Yep.
ZD said.
Yep.
She said, alterations will put food on the table.
And they do.
Yeah. Because people need
alterations. Honestly, they're quick. They're boring to a lot of people, but they're a unique thing that you can do. And
if you find short people, and you can hem pants,
you will have regular people, right? Yeah. It's just like your hairdresser. You know, people will go buy a pair of pants and they will bring them direct. They won't even go home.
Right.
They'll come straight to you, you know. And there's ways to manage that business, too, that I learned in the long run that, you know, bridal alterations are very profitable. They are difficult.
Right.
They can also be risky if you do not know what you're doing. And let me tell you, they are the most difficult clients most of the time. Because it's them. Sometimes it's their mother or it's the person they bring with them. And, you know, it's like the wedding dress is the end-all dress of the world, and it's going to make everything perfect. And if it's not, you know, it's very emotionally tied.
Yeah, I would say that if you want to go, like, the easy route with alterations, you need to have your jeans hemming technique down. Mm-hmm. And your blind hemming technique
Pants hemming is the big thing.
Start off with some pants hemming. Let everyone know you hem pants.
I made it through college hemming jeans and pants.
Now, this is
when I say made to college, I didn't pay for my college. But, you know, that was my pizza money. That was my gas money. That was the money, like, I had that, you know, my parents paid my tuition, thank God. But, you know, that was the money I had.
Yeah. Well, I was making...
I think I did them for $1.
Oh, yeah.
I think so. $2? I can't remember. It wasn't very much.
You all paid for, like, the vast majority of my college, and I came out with, you know, some student loans that were very reasonable. And I did embroidery.
Right, embroidery is the
way. And often would make the student loan payment with that.
Except I bought the embroidery machine.
That's
so
what
see,
I
that's
talk about.
The other thing.
Yes,
right.
Yes. Okay. I could not have afforded.
Right.
I would use our floor model. I mean, I was set up. Mallory is like sewing privilege personified.
So she could make money with no overhead.
That's right.
Right.
But I will say that sometimes when people would come in to buy an embroidery machine, like, if even, okay, they're buying the Sophia, costs $6.99. You know, I would say you have a $12 minimum on your embroidery projects, and I think that they could literally pay for that machine in a year.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I'm thinking of Betty. I don't know if Betty listens to us, but Betty Kramer.
Yeah.
I'm saying your name, Betty, without permission.
Hold on. Betty's daughter is in our beekeeping video.
Oh,
okay.
Yes, she is.
Yeah, all right.
Yes, she is.
Yeah.
But Betty bought a big embroidery machine.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, she was a nurse. Still is.
Yeah.
And she said, I think I've got a way that I can pay for this machine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, her husband was in the insurance business. So he worked for a big, huge, we have a lot of big
insurance
companies.
We're
like insurance capital of the world here. And he was some sort of executive there or something, right? And she said, all of these people are having babies all the time.
Yeah.
And they have this problem of, what do they send?
Yeah.
And they wanted to send like a basket, and they wanted it to be consistent.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what level.
No matter what level the
employee was, yeah, you know, they wanted to be consistent and they wanted it to be unique.
Right.
Right. And she designed this baby blanket where the baby's name was on it, mm-hmm. and the baby's time of birth. And I don't even
remember what
she did. It was very simple. It was very cute. And she was like staying up all night making these blankets because she had a real job too.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But she paid for her machine.
Yeah.
But she basically had a contract. So not only was she smart about what she created,
she
was smart about how she marketed it.
Right.
She went and said, I can solve your problem.
Right.
You know, and they said, okay, well, you know, we'll let you make a few. Well, then the people raved about them.
Uh-huh.
So then she was in, and I don't know, she may still be doing them.
And you may never, you do have to like doing it.
Right.
Because you may never actually, if you factor in every single little thing and you want to pay yourself, let's say you're going to, you know, pay yourself $20 an hour or something. But if you're like, okay, I'm in my sewing room, I'm going to take a little time to make these blankets, I'm going to get this cash, you know, you may never really actually profit, but you may pay for that sewing
machine or what Betty learned, and what I learned too when I, you know, did things like that is she had it down.
Mm-hmm.
She could, you know, she got faster and faster. You know, well, at some point you don't get faster, but, you know, you get faster and more efficient at this, faster and more efficient at this. And the other thing that was nice is Betty, the only thing Betty had to customize was the names. She chose the fabric. So as long as, she didn't have to go, oh, it has to be a blue and orange blanket with the boy's name in this corner. Da, da.
Right.
I mean, it was very consistent. And if she ran out of a certain fabric or she found a fabric on sale, she could get it or, you know. So it just worked out really, really well for her. I always said alterations put money on the food on the table, and they did.
They put money on the table.
Money on the table.
Oh my gosh!
And they did. You know, when I was single, I did alterations.
Right.
You know, and it was my second job.
Yeah.
And I actually fell into bridal alterations, but I will tell you. So listen to this. When I would make a bridal gown, I would sit the bride down. There was a $50 consultation fee that went towards your gown after I talked to you. And then I would say to them, my minimum for a wedding dress is $800. That was my labor.
Yeah.
That was my that was not the materials at all.
Right.
If they balked, they walked. I was fine with it, okay? Because I knew how many fittings this took. I made a muslin. I was giving them what they wanted, okay? Now, if somebody came in and they wanted, you know, a real simple little white slip dress, of course it wasn't $800. But at the time,
it's nice to scare people a little bit.
I mean, at the time, people were wanting dresses with layers and layers and embellishments and all these things. I mean, these were not simple dresses. Mm-hmm. You know, these dresses weighed 50 pounds when you were finished, you know. But I made more money hemming
the dresses.
People bringing me their dresses. I made more money, you know, hemming a wedding dress and making a bustle than I did doing that. For one thing, I usually had one fitting.
Yeah.
They put it on, I altered it, they put it back on, and it fit, and that was that. When you're making something like that at couture, that's why it was $800.
Right.
Because I might meet with them 6-7 times.
Yeah.
You know, and that had nothing to do with the work I did that they didn't see.
Right. Right. Okay, let's take a little break and let's come back. And I think we should explore customization a little bit. And then let's also explore the content area where someone might try to make money off their sewing. Okay, this ad spot is a chance for me to brag a bit. I am really proud of my I Am a Sewing Machine shirt design. The design incorporates elements of a sewing machine, like a spool, a threaded needle, and a knob, all within the text that tells the world that you are a sewing machine.
Made from a super soft cotton and printed here in Columbia, Missouri, our I Am a Sewing Machine t-shirt is available sizes small to 4XL. And we've included garment measurements in the product description so you can get the perfect fit.
It's the perfect gift for yourself or any other sewing machines in your life. The proceeds go to supporting this podcast, and you can get 10% off when you go to sewhere.com/IAMASewingMachine and use the code MACHINE, all caps.
Tell the world that you are a sewing machine.
Sewing out loud.
Hey, y'all. Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
And we're back. I just want to bring up that I think there was this rule that I learned, you know, that you kind of taught me and I learned a little bit. If you are going to make stuff for people, really limit and clearly define what is customizable. So if you are going to do custom embroidery and you have 140 fonts on your computer, you only show people 10. Okay.
You show them the ones that are the fastest, the simplest, and you know, you pick four or five that are very different.
Yes, you pick a block font and you pick a swirly one and you pick a this and you pick a that, and they're all one color.
Right.
And you know, then if somebody's really like, oh, I would just, you know, I really wish there's something really specific, and they're willing to pay for the extra time and everything.
All you say is, I can do that, but it will cost a lot more. I mean, you just say that. That can be done, but it will. And then they'll explore that, and they'll go back to the plain, simple one.
That's right.
That's what will happen.
And they, you know, I would let them go over to the embroidery thread
and pick a color.
And they pick the color. And I didn't care if they spent 20 minutes over there. I was doing something else. You know, but you pick font number 4 and you brought me a navy blue, you know, jacket, and then fine, you can go pick from the 10 colors of silver over there.
Right.
But I'm not going to spend a bunch of time on that. Or they could pick from the thread chart or something. But really define that, you know, and it might have been kind of fun to ask Kim Shear a little bit. She sews and she sells in a boutique and on Etsy.
Right.
And she sells some pretty labor intensive stuff, like those kid bomber jackets.
Yes.
She makes those,
yeah,
you know, from scratch. And so I wonder, I would ask him, be like, do you find this rewarding? Do you think it's a good use of your time? Right. And I mean,
well,
I think she does, because she still does.
You know, also the woman who asked us about it, she's having a baby. She will have a newborn, and she's not ever had a child before. Does she have any concept of, you know, where her time will be spent, or how her time's going to
be flexible with yourself?
Well, I guess what I'm saying is, you know, is she the only one providing childcare?
Right, right.
You know, now, yeah, she might be able to go to the store with the kid in tow.
Right.
But can she really sew with the kid in tow?
Will
the kid take a nap during the afternoon? I don't know. Can she sew then, or is that when she's going to have to do something else? I mean, you know, she's kind of in a position where she doesn't know how it's going to be either.
You're going to be very uncertain. And I think we talked about this in our parenting.
So she's starting a whole lot of new things at once.
Right.
She's basically starting a business or, you know, whatever, and, you know, a new family.
Well,
so
she said she didn't know. I want to be
well,
clear.
No. She was asking. Yes. She was just asking people to make comments.
Yeah, because, you know.
And we're making comments.
One baby I had, I could have run. Well, I did. I, like, took her to the shop and I did her website. And then second baby was
The other thing, too, is they're very portable till they're about 6 months
That's
old.
Right.
Then all of a sudden they start walking around you know, are not taking as long. You know, things change.
Yeah, so it's nice.
So, I mean, you know, there's just so many facts. If your kids are in school all day, maybe it's a good deal. You can get it done. I don't know. But, you know, a lot of this, there are no definitive answers to.
So. Well, we know that.
Right.
So keep your if you are going to run a business like that, keep your customization very clearly defined.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I want to talk about is following people who sew on Instagram and thinking that they're like
making a
bunch of money from their social presence.
Right.
And I have followed people for long enough to start following them and think, oh my gosh, they must really be like sponsored by a fabric company, or they must be whatever.
So if you think they are endorsed or sponsored, you believe they're making money from them.
Oh, this person must be generating income from their social presence or from their blog or from their website or whatever. But then the post will come. The day will come when they say, oh my gosh, I'm just so burnt out because I've been doing this for free. Or, and it's different, you know, I'm not like naming any names here because that's not appropriate. But you also, sometimes you see just these beautiful photos and you think, well, why can't I do that? Or it must be, you know, easy to do this. A lot of those people, you know, they're just haven't, this is their hobby.
Right.
Maybe they've got a little bit more discretionary income than another person or than
true,
you,
right.
You know, or, you know, or you look back and you see, oh, the feed is actually very uneven. They get to sew a lot during one time of the year and then not during another or something like that. And starting a blog, I felt a lot of people are like, well, I'll start a blog. In order to, this is what we do. We create a lot of content and then we sell things. And there are blogs that create a lot of content and they have a lot of ads on them. You know, so it's not as simple, even though setting up a website can be, can start off being pretty affordable.
Right.
You know, it's not always a surefire thing. So I want people to know that it's not easy to grow an Instagram following. It's not, you know, always that simple. And even though someone might look like they're having a really good time and like they're,
it's just easy and it's just fun.
And they're putting money on the table with Instagram. Instagram, I want you to question that, you know.
Well, I just, even when we had the shop, right, the brick and mortar, people would come in and say, oh, I wish I was you and you, I got to sew all day. Well, we didn't always get to sew all day.
No.
And sometimes we had to sew what we didn't.
Right.
Like, it wasn't our idea we wanted to sew this. It was like we had to get ready for a class, or we had to do this. And we fixed machines, and we paid bills, and we cleaned toilets.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's, you know, I guess what I'm saying is things aren't always what they appear to be, right?
I've learned
I really think a lot of people thought we just came in there and laid around on our fabric and sewed it.
I've learned that, this is I don't even know what this podcast can be called anymore because I don't think we can call it budgeting for sewing. But I have learned from being a part of a trade organization that a lot of the people who are in this sewing and craft world, it's not their only job.
Right.
And they are people who don't have to work.
Right.
Because they
are. They don't have to have a consistent flow a predictable flow.
I just want to say that I don't have any statistics about this, but it's something that I've spoken with other people. Other people who say, yeah, you're right. I don't have to work. I have a spouse. I do this. I do try to do it in a professional way. I do use the money. We like the money. But like if that and I think this is maybe part of a deeper issue, but the sewing world, the crafting world, people do expect a lot of free content.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's okay to give things away for free. We give things away for free. Mm-hmm. But I think that kind of affects on the whole how much people are then willing to pay for things.
Well,
and then who these types of businesses can support.
Mm-hmm.
Because if everyone is expected to do things for free all the time, then you will see that the professionals are not people who must make a consistent income with health insurance and everything like that. So why I bring that up in the budgeting for sewing episode is because I don't want people to think that when they go and try to do such and such, they try to make custom things or they try to have the sewing blog and it doesn't work, it's not because you're like bad or anything.
You didn't fail.
Lots of people have tried and not been quite as successful. So you might, I guess maybe this brings up, you might be better off doing the freelance editing and putting that towards your sewing hobby versus trying to make the thing.
Well, and that was what I was saying about burning yourself out on what you love.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to meet someone else's expectations. You know, the other thing, I don't know, Mallory, if you even said this when you were talking, but so maybe you see, I'm looking at L.A. Finch's logo right here, right now. So you may see something where someone's like, oh, you know, I love L.A. Finch. Here's L.A. Finch. You know, you might be thinking they're getting paid by L.A. Finch. Mm-hmm. Okay. They might not be getting any remuneration whatsoever.
Right, right.
They just like that. And they just decided to do it.
Right.
Or maybe she is sending them fabric and they're sewing it up.
Well, technically, I mean, they should disclose that.
Well, I was just going to say this.
Yeah.
Okay, this is where
is
I'm
that
going.
Where you're going? Okay.
This is where I'm going. So all of that is supposed to be disclosed, but it's not. What do I want to say? It's not in. That's not enforced always.
Well, not in our industry.
No,
in
a lot
enough.
Of it. You know, I mean, no. Because nobody's losing money if it isn't.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
If somebody had started losing money because it wasn't, you'd be like, believe it'd be enforced. So, you know, somebody should have said, I made this romper because, you know, it was sent to me by L.A. Finch.
Right.
Da 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 da. But you don't always see that.
Yeah. Like when we are sponsored by L.A. Finch, well, first of all, on the podcast, it's very obvious that
right.
it's an ad. But when you do a social post, you should be disclosing.
So if you see an Instagram post, the first thing, if it's something we're doing for Baby Lock, say, it should say hashtag. What? How do they do it?
Well, you can do it a few ways. You can do hashtag ad or hashtag.
But it should
whatever.
Be like your first thing. It
right.
should not even be buried.
Yeah, you shouldn't.
Yes.
In fact, our affiliate disclosure that we put in our blog post, it's up at the top.
Right.
And I've seen where some people put it at the bottom of the blog post. And from my understanding, from speaking with many experts, technically, it should be one of the very first things that someone reads. Once again,
right.
no one's enforcing this. But
and do people even realize the significance of it? Who knows?
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, don't think that because someone mentions a company,
right.
they are being, you know, they do have remuneration
okay,
or something.
That brings up that, you know, there is now like a trade organization for influencers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, so people who do like branded stuff
right.
on social media. And I think that's really good because we've been approached before. So first of all, we have amazing sponsors like L.A. Finch who
right.
understand the value of our content. And that's we very much appreciate that. But we've been approached before where people are like, well, we'll give you like this piece of product if you, you know, do this and this and this, like equating to like hours and hours of work for us.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like hours. Yeah.
And I think that it's really good that there's kind of like a union out there now because I think those brands sometimes want to take advantage of people and
well,
their time.
And they
wouldn't want you to do that if it wasn't valuable to them. Okay.
Right.
You know? Okay. We're totally – I don't even know what we're going to call this episode.
I don't know. So I mean, I guess what I am thinking of is we can get paid in product. Right?
Yeah.
And at the end of the year, we get a 1099,
mm-hmm.
which means we have to pay taxes on that product, okay? And it will not be the wholesale price of that product that they decide we pay taxes on. So they're giving us a product at their highest, you know,
right.
MSRP and saying, you know, we paid them $12,000, you know, or
yeah.
whatever, and now we get to pay taxes on that.
Yeah. So, you know, well, also, if you're really going to get into this and you want to make money on it, you really need to get, like, a small business license and you need
yeah.
to be doing your stuff right. So, anyway.
But alterations, we put money on the table.
Just hem some pants that can be, you know, cash only. No, I, so, anyway.
Bring me your $15 in your pants.
That's right.
What you need to say.
That's right. And minimums. Oh, my gosh. I don't even know what this is going to be called.
That's,
set aside money every month for sewing.
No. If you do decide to sew like this, I think Mallory's very correct. You have to decide what your price list is or what your minimum is. Especially like embroidery was easy. I don't do anything. I don't touch anything for less than $10.
Yeah. And
yeah.
I
only want one letter. $10. I still have to hoop it. I still have to work it up on the computer. I still have to thread my machine. I still have to, you know, when somebody says to you, but I only want, and say, what we could say was, well, we have a machine for sale.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but they didn't want that. They wanted something done for very little.
With alterations, I think this was kind of left unsaid, but I know it's something that you learned and you taught me. With alterations like pants hemming and embroidery, you get the repeat customers.
Yes.
Those people, you know, I would do one baby blanket for somebody, and then they were coming back to me every 2 weeks.
Right.
You know, and so being consistent. And
you develop a clientele.
Yeah, you develop a clientele. But also, I want to bring up something else, kind of a flip side of this. I remember one time, Fred. I hope she doesn't mind me sharing this. This was kind of
we really use Fred.
Yeah, we really do. But she said, hey, everybody, I have a goal I'm trying to reach, like a financial goal. And so contact me if you need. And she listed some skills she had. One of those things included sewing. She also was like, I'll fold your laundry. I'll do whatever, you know. And I loved that she put that out there to her friends. And so they could help her by helping themselves, you know, and know that this. So you may sew to meet a different financial goal that's not your sewing.
Right.
And it, you know, I know it's six of one, half dozen of the other. But sometimes it is sort of in the way you frame it.
I just had a friend actually, you know, who did this. She just finished PT school.
Yeah.
But she is immunosuppressed.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And she is really looking for a job where, you know, she, you know, this is hard now.
Yes.
Okay. And she put it out in social media and said, while I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do, I still need to make an income. These are the things I can do. And she named childcare, pet sitting. Uh-huh. I cannot work in a retail store with the situation I'm in. She put what she couldn't do. Either.
Yeah.
You know, she said, but I am, and I know she'll work. And I don't know she, you know, and I was like, and she said, say childcare. So you may want to know that. Right. But, you know, and I said, I will keep you in mind and I will keep her in mind. If something comes up, even for me or someone else, I will keep her in mind.
So depending on how you psychologically view these things. So if you go make a bunch of masks and then you are just emotionally worn out from this, you don't want to think about it like that, that it's funding your sewing. But would you think, oh, I'll make these masks or a baby blanket and it's going to fund my student loan payment, or it's going to fund, you know, this or that.
Gas money,
whatever. However you want to think about it, I think that sometimes can make a big difference. But then, you know, maybe a percentage of your income is set aside for sewing and that's sort of non-negotiable. Sometimes that can make you feel like, oh, I always know.
Well, I think about the woman that said this. I'm having my first baby. I might be staying home, you know, because childcare, you know, but she's thinking.
Yeah, good to.
You know, she's thinking about it. She's asking about it. She probably will come up with something.
And it can be, sometimes people ask questions in Facebook groups. I'm like, what the hell's wrong with you? Like, why are you asking this question here?
Right.
However, she's asking this question in a group where, like, people love to sew and are trying to find time to sew. It's a really good context. And sometimes you do get a really good individual answer.
Well,
it helps you so much.
And she, you know, that's what she asked for. Throw your ideas my way. You know,
I don't know where she's from, but, like, somebody brought something up in the group about having become injured, and someone was like, oh my God, that medical bill must have been terrible. And they're like, oh, well, I'm Canadian, so it didn't matter.
Yeah.
So it's like, we here in the U.S., we're like, okay, got to find a job with health insurance, you know, and that's not something necessarily that everyone in the entire world
has to do.
That's not quite the calculus they're using, you know, when thinking about this, or even, you know, like, we don't really have subsidized childcare in this country, where there are some countries where there is subsidized childcare, you know. So she's going to get an answer, going to get a few answers. Maybe it'll be applicable, maybe won't. But maybe someone's individual situation will inspire her to problem solve.
Sometimes somebody's idea sparks an idea. It's not even theirs that you go with. But it's like, oh, wait a minute.
I love to look at kind of the broader, you know, there are a lot of podcasts out there and like data analytics where it's nice to get a really broad sampling to make some decisions. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes it's nice to get some real specific, oh, this is what happened to me, sample of one answers to.
But I think the one thing you can take away from this podcast is blogging and social media doesn't, that alone and making content doesn't make the money just flow in.
Nope.
You know, and if you do, the reason we have sponsors is we have to go market ourselves to them. They don't fall in your lap.
No, and that I, you know, to have a successful social media presence, you have to look like you're having a good time all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't.
Well, we are most of the time.
Necessarily have to.
What have you done lately?
Yeah. What have you done lately?
What have you done lately?
Yeah. No.
What have you done lately?
I think we really might have lost some people there. That was a joke from before the podcast. So anyway, yeah, be careful. Comparing yourself to people on social media has been discussed. And
probably
so,
don't compare yourself to anyone anywhere.
Yeah. That's tough anyway. But I do think that when you kind of get into sewing, you're on Instagram to look for inspiration.
You know, I think what she did was great, asking people for ideas or what do you think, or has anybody done this or whatever, because she's obviously going to have to alter it to meet her
you just got a new boat. No one's saying, like, are you going to give people boat rights to pay for your boat?
I know, isn't that
somebody
weird?
Might say, will you sew some things to pay for your boat though? You know, it's a different thing. It's a different thing. But all right. Well,
I might just sew a new boat.
Maybe we just have created more questions than answers.
Probably.
I don't know. That's okay.
Yeah.
But if you have any insights on this or personal experiences, we'd love for you to share them in the group, or you can share them in the comments on this podcast episode. You can go to sewingoutloud.com and it takes you to like the podcast page. I haven't shared that in a while. So that is a domain name that we own. All right, ZD, take it away.
So long and so happy.
Thanks for listening to Sewing Out Loud. For even more expert sewing advice, visit sewhere.com.
Hey, y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit DiscoverSouthCarolina.com.